Yes, sir. Let's get after it. It's a Friday morning. Welcome to it. The weekend is here with Sports Radio TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this 22nd day of October 2021. Gang's all here. JR, Simmer, and Hammer. And you're waking up to, we'll call this a pretty typical fall day. We've had some overnight showers. Might continue into the early part of the day, but overall today will be a cloudy and cool day. In fact, we're already at the high temperature of the day. We're at 6 degrees, and that's as good as we're going to do today. 6 degrees will be the high. That's well below normal. It's time of year around 10, 11 is a typical high, but 6 for today. Weekend forecast, maybe a little bit better tomorrow. They're now saying we'll see a little bit of sunshine. Mix of sun and clouds tomorrow. A high of 9. And then for Sunday, cloudy, and again, a high of 9 degrees. As you wake up this morning, as we mentioned, it is 6 degrees. As we say good morning and hello to Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simmer?
You know what, Friday, JR, I'm always good, but I got to be honest with you. It came out this morning, it was windy, it was cold, and the first thing I thought to myself, come on, that can't be frost on the ground, but it just had a bit of that feel, right? Exactly what we don't like in November, that cold, rainy, and yeah, so windy.
And it's not even November.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Hello, McFly. Exactly, but it had all that transitional weather that nobody's a fan of, and God, my weather app, I opened it yesterday. Wap, yap, yap, yap. Haven't had that much coffee yet, Jer. I had this great forecast coming into the weekend.
Well, we'll see.
My weather,
I don't know
whap.
About great. I think the temperatures have always been below normal, but at least we're seeing maybe a little bit of sun tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
And dig up my tomato plants, get that project done. Or maybe I won't. Final event of the golf club season is tomorrow. I was going to call it the Iron Man, which is what it used to be. Now the Iron Person.
Okay.
Yes. So this is,
So you had to switch that?
It was switched, yes, by the powers that be.
Okay,
yes,
that's good.
It's the world we live in right now.
So give us a little breakdown.
The Iron Person.
Yeah.
So you play it, you play the course from the furthest you can play it, so the gold tees, and they put all the pins on impossible places, on slopes or whatever.
Yeah.
So in other words, you are going to shoot your worst score of the year.
Okay.
And you're playing usually incredibly cold or difficult weather. Okay. So that's why you have to sort of soldier through it, as it were.
What's your strategy? Like, what do you map out here?
Good hope.
Because the greens
drinking.
Are, well, that's fun, but the greens are normally tough anyway, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now they're even tougher.
Do you laugh when you see some of the pin placements?
Like, absolutely.
Do you guys get the little card beforehand?
No. Okay. You just kind of get up there and you go, oh, they put it there, they?
Nice.
Yeah. Maximum 4 putts, though.
Oh, okay.
It's just kind of, you got to go for pins. And I played in this a couple of years ago and I had, I was about 10 more than I typically am, which I was thrilled with.
Okay.
It was actually a really good day.
What would tend to be the average here? Any idea?
I don't know. Everybody'd be all over the map.
Yeah,
some guys
would
be happy to break 100.
But I meant more like, is that what it is? A plus 10 is very good and a plus 15 is okay. Plus 20 is
don't know.
Is that?
Okay, all I know is that 10 over. Considering the course plays about 600 more yards than I typically would, and it's really cold and the pins are really hard, I'd say 10 more than I typically shoot is, I was very happy with that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got lucky.
Cold enough for a double glove action?
Never with the gloves. Might even go shorts tomorrow. Got to be warm up top.
Okay.
But most importantly,
well,
typically you might every golfer would know there's this thing called birdie juice.
Yeah.
That fellows would bring perhaps a little bit something to celebrate.
Nice.
Should you get a birdie, this would be a typical round.
Okay.
On a round like tomorrow, it will be par juice.
If you can
get a par
juice,
you're going to celebrate. So by the end of the round, we may be having some fun.
Celebrating with the old New York Ranger player, pear juice.
That's exactly.
Hey.
Yes, that's right.
So what do you usually got going on? A couple of wine coolers in the old thermostat?
You know what I'm going to go? So I'm playing with my friends Ron and Brian.
Yeah.
Ronnie's going to bring in, we're going to go with the new stuff I've discovered, Cabot Trail.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
He's going to bring that. I'm going with the Cabot Trail whiskey that you can't get here because I told you guys that my wife and
daughter. Not the liqueur whiskey, but the real whiskey.
It's whiskey with a maple flavor.
That's fine.
Right?
That's
you
okay.
Take a little tiny shot, not a big shot, just a tiny shot.
Got to go slow. We got 18 holes.
Exactly.
Be careful on that.
And it's cold. Yeah. And
what about a nice Cesar Cedeno? That's always a good way. Hey?
Cesar.
During the round?
Hey?
Who's that? What are we going to mix up? What do we got? A roving bar and my golf cart?
Oh, absolutely. I would
like
assume.
Like a Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah,
there.
No, I would assume when you're that close to your, like, first of all, you should have the tunes going. That is very important on a day like that. Have some nice music going. Yeah, I would think you just have the suitcase, the whatever, briefcase, whatever. Just open it right up. Just have a nice.
And
even
Caesar making kit?
Well, even in the back where you normally, the little basket there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, you just put that right. It might even be able to get maybe a blender that doesn't need to be plugged in. Maybe you could just blend up margaritas. I think you should go above and beyond. Plus, that already made Caesar is not that bad.
It's pretty average.
Okay.
I like my Caesar on the spicy side.
Oh, okay.
So maybe I just bring my own Tabasco.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pre-made one is I find it pretty average. Okay. I like mine with a little zip.
But you don't have to make it, so it's a little bit easier in that turn. You don't need to carry the bar cart around with you on the golf course.
Mm.
You just have a couple of cans or bottles if you want.
But also on a cold day, everything's staying nicely chilled as well.
Mm. True enough.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Well, I got the little thing there that keeps things cold too.
Still can't do the Caesar. It's just not part
of
me. No. Just can't do it. Clamato, tomato, whatever it is. No. Not a part of it.
Todd
doesn't enjoy it.
It's got to have the Tabasco, so it's got to have the bite. It also needs either the celery or the bean. Yeah. The bean is very important.
Yeah, I had a
Caesar the other day after the round.
Yeah.
No celery, no bean, not the same.
Oh, you got to have bean and an olive. And I got to be honest with you. Would you guys probably agree that celery should be retired at this point? Because
I'm a big celery fan.
The new generation.
Why are you so hard on celery?
Oh, the new generation, Hammer, they don't want anything to do with it. And a lot of times it comes in the Caesar. And first of all, it's massive. No, nobody eats celery like they used to. I used to eat it all the time. A little cheese on it. Cheese Whiz right down the middle.
Some raisins in it?
No.
A little trail in the Cheese Whiz? No,
never did that, but just the Cheese Whiz in the middle of it. But it's just not even salads used to always have celery in them. I don't see it anywhere anymore. It's just kind of like, and let's be honest.
We're still big celery fans in our family.
Okay.
Get that crunch.
Yeah,
not at our place. Can't think of maybe if it's mixed into something, but just not. And let's be honest, it's 99% water anyway.
Yeah.
But
it counts as a vegetable at our family. You eat your vegetables today? Absolutely. I had some celery, so it's all good. Anyway, that's the crux of my weekend.
Yeah.
You guys, anything good?
You know what? Tonight,
that's the fulcrum of my weekend.
I got to work, but I'll be working the old Saturday night or Saturday afternoon ice hockey match.
Oh, the nice 1 o'clock match.
That is perfect. So roll out, probably a nice dinner on Saturday night, and I think it'll be typical. A little hockey for the boys on Sunday, and then hunker down, watch a little National Football League. That'll be the weekend.
NFL weekend schedule, by the way, not very good.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
When Bengals-Ravens is the best game of the weekend. We hope it turns out to be a good game, but that's kind of, you look at the records of the teams. It's a lot of the good teams have the weekend off, and then you got a lot of mismatches is the way the weekend is looking. Hammer, what do you got going on?
I've been told there's going to be some baseball is done unless the kid wants to get out, which he tends to do. There's no team functions. That is finished.
Mm. You get out there. Hey, put him through his rounds. Get the pitching machine
it's
out there.
It's not me. Okay? He's got to be. I'm the pitching machine.
Self-driven.
There's no pitching machine. It
You're
absolutely
probably
is.
Hovering over his bed at 7
he's
o'clock.
Probably,
get up. We're going to hit some bongos.
No. This is where he makes him hit the street. Hammer now in the cross, mini cross. He's out there driving, and the kid's running behind it.
Now we're working out. We got the sweats on. I've got him tied up to the bumper. If he falls,
feeling
man,
strong.
All of a sudden, it's like the lightning flashes, like the movie Misery. He's above the bed, and all he's got is the eggs in the blender, just like Rocky. Right? That's all.
What kind of parent do you guys think I am here?
Well, usually because you come in on the week on Monday and you have no voice left over.
That's
so obviously
because I'm
you've been
cheering,
yelling at your children
cheering
all weekend.
Cheering on, not yelling. I am a parent. I am not a coach.
You boo your own kids.
And the Hammer, they do have some indoor stuff, but it's a pretty
indoor stuff starts in January, and maybe they sneak some stuff
pretty,
in come
pretty,
November.
Yeah, but pretty
which is 2 weeks away. I give them two weeks off.
But what a disadvantage, though, eh? And pretty simple as to why in the United States between Florida, Arizona, Texas, and California, and obviously all the countries below the United States. The kids that are playing baseball year-round, right? I mean, that is the tough part for the kids. Say, you can find your work now, but it's still not like it is for the kids playing in the southern parts.
This is what we're waiting on. We've got a group of still some Little League dads that we always got together in the winter, about five of us, five kids, where we would rent a high school gym once a week, and we'd go out there and just have a little fun, have a little ball, and then play some, floor hockey or football or basketball at the end of it, but we're still waiting for the school boards to open up those gyms. So that hasn't happened yet. So there will be no kind of fall winter ball yet until that happens.
Yeah, I got a note from a guy yesterday talking about the fact that we should be publicizing this more, is the fact that the school boards have to this point decided not to make their gyms available for any sort of activities for anyone, like kids sports, fitness for adults, whatever it may be. All of the school gyms, which is a huge outlet for, you know, if you're not a member of a, don't have the money or you don't want to be a member of a full-time gym, a lot of people just go to kind of local fitness classes or whatever. And
parents have their kids on wait
lists. Basketball, all that stuff.
Exactly.
Right?
Basketball, volleyball.
Which is too bad. If the province is supposed to be announcing that they're going to be opening things up even more later on today, I would think this should be part and parcel of it, right?
I would hope so.
Just lock down the entire winter if we're on the right track and the rest of society is being allowed to open up.
Well, and the other part of that, JR, all these places are funded by the taxpayer, right? I mean, if you're a private school, okay, good, that's fine. But, hey, that gymnasium right down the road there is actually being funded by me. And if kids want to get into it and get going, yeah, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They're even talking about relaxing the mandate on masks. So, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
So maybe that will be I wouldn't think that would be something the province would announce because that's more down to, again, the school board level. But perhaps when they see what the province is doing, perhaps they may rethink that. But that was certainly, the one fellow that got in touch with us yesterday was not very happy about that.
It eliminates a lot of winter activities for kids and adults, too. They get out there and play in these rec leagues.
And again, for a lot of people who don't have a lot of extra money around, those are very cheap ways you
Absolutely.
Can have your kids participate in anything, sports, just any activities to keep them active in the winter. So, all right, we'll keep our eye on that situation. 6:21, we'll take a break when we come back. Don't forget, it's a wrench throwing Friday. You got a wrench to throw today. Anything in the world of sports, the world in general that's bothered you, we'll toss some wrenches at it today. Feel good going into the weekend, so you can text us your wrenches at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply when you text us. You can also tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll also, of course, talk about the Sens. They fall to 2-2 on the season for the narrow loss to the Sharks last night. Lots of interesting storylines from that, from Brady Tkachuk to Matt Murray to old Sens killer James Reimer. Does it again, this time in the San Jose Sharks uniform. So all of that and a Shane Pinto injury on top of that. So we'll tell you about that and, of course, get you set for Sens and Rangers. The rest of the story, including the Habs, now 0-5. Is Montreal on fire yet? I mean, literally on, like, have they had riots and is anything on fire in Montreal that we know of? We'll give you the latest on the Habs situation, which is not very good. And the entire hockey story. One was the loneliest number last night. If you only scored one goal, chances are you lost. We'll go through all of the hockey stuff. The baseball playoffs, a huge night for a fellow by the name of Chris Taylor of the LA Dodgers as he ties a baseball playoff record with 3 home runs. The NFL Week 7 kicks off with the Browns winning a narrow game over the Broncos. So we'll go through the NFL weekend and, of course, the Red Blacks back at it tomorrow in Hamilton as well. So a busy show on the way. Lots of winning as well. Our $1,000 minute, our King of the Grill contest. And Sens Caps tickets for the game coming up on Monday night. That's all straight ahead here on a Friday. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Dave Poulin, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us live at 8 o'clock. He was in Montreal last night doing the Habs Canes, and we'll get into that in just a second. But Montreal is 0-5, and the city may be on fire, and not in a good way. All right, some wrenches on this wrench throwing Friday. A wrench to everybody who didn't go to the Sens game last night. That comes from Unsigned.
Not yes, hell yes.
And from Tom in Stitsnata, JR, thanks for bringing up the gym issue. A surplus helicopter jet engine wrench to all the school boards. That's from Tom.
Surplus helicopter jet engine.
All right, there's your template. If you're new to Wrench Throwing Friday, basically something that's been bugging you. You mentioned it to us. We mentioned it on the air. We toss a wrench at it. Hopefully it makes you feel a little bit better. All right, so keep them coming. You can text us, as always, at 12-1200. All right, let's start with the Sens game last night against the Sharks. Of course, this was the season debut for both Matt Murray and Brady Tkachuk, two big storylines from an Ottawa point of view. And as far as Tkachuk goes, he got involved early.
And now Shabbat sends it ahead to center. Here's Tkachuk, plays it along the boards. Batherson and Norris to the line. Batherson, his shot, scores! Batherson snaps it by Reimer. 1-0 Ottawa.
There you go. Drake Batherson would get the scoring started for Ottawa, assisted by Brady Tkachuk. Unfortunately, that was all the scoring the Senators would do on the night. Let's take it to the second period with the game tied at 1 and the Sharks on the power play.
Here's Eklund again with it in the corner. Back to the point for Carlson. Slings it across, gets it back. Carlson back across again. Scores! The one-timer blast, and the Sharks have taken a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, Kevin LeBanc gets credit for the goal, and that would be the last goal of the night. Sharks win the game 2-1, and Ottawa's record is now even at 2-2. The Sharks move to 3-0. Interesting, Simmer, LeBanc's goal, which was on the power play, and it was a really good screen in front of Matt Murray. It's a little bit of a carbon copy of a goal he scored in the first period, which ended up getting waved off because he was offside, but beating Matt Murray over the glove in both cases. What were your thoughts on Matt Murray's night last night?
Matt Murray from the start of last season, I want to say a year ago, but I'm assuming that wasn't the case, Jer, when it started night and day. Overall efficiency, structure, movement, size, everything is really good. The only strange part is going left to right. For whatever reason, that left hip tends to drop, and on the one that was disallowed, thankfully, strangely, he handcuffs himself. I didn't have as much of a problem with the winning goal as the offside goal. The offside goal is just a really bad goal that's been a tendency for him to overplay on that side, but the rest of it I thought was very good.
Yeah, it's, and again, you're the goaltending guru it's the way when he gets beat that side, which obviously is where they're trying to beat him, right, is over the glove. It's the thing that when the puck goes into the net, it's the way he's holding his glove hand that looks odd.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if that's something they have to fix or whether all goalies give something. They have to give you a shooter something. You can't cover everything. And whether for Matt Murray, it's like, if you can go top corner on me, then good on you. But I can't save everything. Or do you think that that is truly a weakness he has?
No, it's a weakness. And in the sense of, as I said, the offside goal. Okay, you're going left to right as he starts to drop. As I said, just think of it, your left hip folds down, JR. What he's doing is he's bringing his elbow down. He's basically handcuffing himself. Now, I think there's a tendency, which is a little bit scary for me. He has a tendency to try to block the puck with his glove versus catching it, which is never a great thing. But the modern-day goaltender is a little more of a blocker than the old traditional. But that's the tendency there. The winning goal, actually, as I said, I think that was a good shot. That's the one where you'd say, hey, I've squared up.
He hammered that.
Yeah, and there was a real good screen on it. But there, again, has been that tendency, as I said, it's not just the glove hand itself, because really when you watch that offside goal, JR, if you come over to that side, now, how crazy was it with Hogberg, who was actually going right to left last year and sliding into the corner? And we had a real howl about it. But in this case, left to right, like I said, all of a sudden it folds in, and that's something that you could correct, because realistically, if you see where that went in, and I know they talked on the telecast, it was a nice shot. That's not that great of a shot. If he's big and square on the puck right there, pretty good chance that's going to hit you. So a little thing to work on. But overall, like I said, in tight, boy, he had that really nice, where they had that tic-tac-toe shot where he came across, made a real nice pad save. And like I said, his overall structure and feel to his game, to me, like I say, it's night and day from a year ago.
So he has earned, in your opinion, the opportunity to start again tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. And again, we said that anyway. But I was just curious after what was a good preseason. I didn't put a ton into it. But he missed some time, and like I said, I think if you're a Sens fan, just like to see a minor correction on that part of it, where, like I said, just kind of, they'll have to make an adjustment, I guess, is the big thing. But as I say, that's been a tendency that we've seen with him since he's come to Ottawa.
All right, so decent from Matt Murray, by the way, credited with 32 saves on the night. At the other end, the old Sens killer. Do we have James Reimer's career record versus Ottawa? I mean, dating back to his time in Toronto, right? He has always... Yeah. Performed well against the Sens, and I think specifically here at Canadian Tire Center for sure. No great surprise that he gets the start for the Sharks last night. And I don't want to say that Ottawa had the Sens outshot San Jose on the night 31-24. I didn't know that there weren't 15,000 10 bell saves that Reimer made. But when he was, asked to make them, he made all of the saves except for the one on Batherson. So.
Well, and it is funny, and I didn't even think to bring it up because I'm watching the game, and I can remember working a game late in the season when they'd come in here, and I think it was when the one fellow there, what was the backup we used to have some fun with, that Sparky, Garrett Sparks. I just remember Reimer coming in, and it was just ridiculous what the record was. And the thing with him, Jared, that I give a lot of credit, it has never been clean, right? Like, he's not your traditional goaltender, but what he has been able to do and find work is that the freaking guy just battles every night, right? You know, he finds a way to make saves, keep you in a hockey game, and like you said, against the Ottawa Senators, he's had a great run, especially here in Ottawa.
So we mentioned it was Brady Tkachuk's first game as well. He got an assist on that Batherson goal. And despite the fact DJ Smith said he wanted to limit Brady Tkachuk's ice time, I went and looked it up last night. Brady Tkachuk over his career averages 17 minutes and 42 seconds a night. Last night, he played 19 minutes and 39 seconds. Now, part of it due to Shane Pinto exiting the game after playing only two shifts. But also the scoreline had Ottawa behind for the last half of the game. They're looking for the tying goal, so you want to get your guys out there that give you the best opportunity to try to tie it. So Brady Tkachuk ended up saying probably more time than the coach wanted to, but here was DJ Smith's assessment on our post-game show on Tkachuk's night.
The more the game went on, Brady got more into it. It's tough. It hasn't played in a long time, so... he still had some chances, and he'll continue to get better every night. Murr made a lot of really good saves. You know, he was completely screened on the winner. And it's a good shooter. You know, it is what it is. I mean, that game could go either way.
You know that a coach wants to get a message out when he's asked about one guy, and immediately answers a little bit about Tkachuk, and then moves to Matt Murray, unprompted, on that. Brady Kachuk's night, 19:39, as we mentioned, ice time. Three shots, seven attempts, and six hits. What'd you make of number seven's game?
Just okay, JR. I appreciate the hits. I'm not sure on the first. I guess that's the way he plays, JR. He's never going to change. I thought he went out of his way to waste some energy, but that's Brady Tkachuk. I expected him to have a bit of a tough time, and that's really what it is, to get the legs under you. As to how that's going to progress or how he's going to feel, JR, it may be a one game where you get the rust out and feels much better tomorrow. We'll reconvene tomorrow at 1 p.m. But I got to be honest with you, just the overall, and I'm assuming there wasn't a great crowd there. That was a very flat first period that I had some expectations there'd be a lot more pressure by Ottawa, and it came out, and I guess underwhelming was my feeling watching it on TV. Just kind of the overall and the energy and just the feel around the hockey club.
Yeah, the start was very slow. San Jose carried the play, and that goal for Ottawa actually came against the run of play. The Sharks had dominated the first bit of the game. The announced crowd, to hammer, 8,900. Did I read that correctly?
I believe you're absolutely correct.
Which I'm actually a little bit surprised by. I didn't expect, 10,000 fans to show up because Brady Tkachuk was playing last night. But, the situation is not only here in Ottawa. Ottawa's situation, I guess maybe save for Buffalo, is the worst in the NHL as far as attendance goes. But just on that particular topic, Winnipeg had their home opener last night. They play in the smallest building in the league. They didn't sell out their game last night either. So, again, there are many reasons. We've gone through it. We'll continue to go through it because I think this will be an ongoing storyline. But I was surprised, seeing it again. I'm watching on TV like you were, Simmer, and I saw, okay, there's a fair number of empty seats in the 100 level. Yeah. I kind of figured it would be around 11 or 12, so I was surprised when the attendance was only 9.
Yeah, and for a young hockey team, I'm not saying that's the reason, JR, but I think there was so much hype, excitement. Everyone talked about the electricity in the building beforehand, and you came out, and like I said, it just kind of felt like that. I had some expectations of a little more speed, but like I said, it's very much a work in progress, and, pretty quickly, we have elevated these players. We want them all on long-term contracts. I mean, it takes some time for them to necessarily. I mean, Thomas Chabot, you watch him on the ice. I mean, it's just such a treat to watch him.
14 shot attempts last night.
And,
14.
Hey, watching Erik Karlsson. I mean, he's not the Erik Karlsson of before, but he certainly stabilized his game. He's playing very confidently. And, hey, you got a young San Jose group that I really don't know what to make of right now, JR, but they're having some fun playing with some tempo. And from an auto perspective, very much a work in progress. And it showed you also, as you mentioned, with Pinto going down. But also, I think so far, a fourth line, you're realistically almost dressing three lines for Ottawa right now. You know, there's not much coming from there. And I think that's another reason why Brady Tkachuk pretty quickly on the left side. You run out of options or opportunities or who you want to throw over the boards.
All right. So Matt Murray's a storyline. Brady Tkachuk is a storyline. Chabot and Stützle in terms of just bringing it last night. We can get into that a little bit later on this morning. Tim Stützle has to be so frustrated right now. He's getting so many chances, but the goals are coming. But the other big storyline from last night, First shift of the game, Shane Pinto takes a hard hit.
Pinto down to the line, gets in, takes it wide, can't get a shot away. No, he's hit into the boards, and he is out. He is out on his... Now he's turning to try and get back up again, but he is
shoulder,
injured.
Shoulder, Dean. Shoulder.
His right shoulder is in a bad spot, and that was a very iffy hit from Ferraro.
All right, so that was the very first shift of the game for our Shane Pinto. I don't know, in retrospect, and again, and Dean and Gord are calling it in live time, I don't know that I saw it as an iffy hit. It was just one of those, he's kind of in an awkward spot. It's in an awkward spot on the ice. I think as a defenseman, that's part of your DNA. You got to be physical. Unfortunately for Shane Pinto, he got caught in a bad spot. He ends up crashing into the boards. I thought it was really, really bad, and I was shocked to see him come out and come out for a shift in the second period of the game last night. Now, that ended up being his only shift of the game because he left again. The good news after the game, DJ Smith said, whatever the issue is, and it's shoulder-related, it's not structural, so it won't be presumably a long-term thing. He says it's just sore. But not structural. So that was the positive news on the Shane Pinto injury.
Yeah, and funny, guys, when he came back and then he kind of got slashed, I started to think it might have been his elbow. But anyway, shoulder. And as far as the hit itself, as you say, in real time, it's hard to judge a JR, but it was just a really clean hit. You get an awkward motion. It's very similar to, and I would say Borowiecki was more drawn out. One of the big things Borowiecki always did was just as a guy goes to make the cut down low, you're basically on your outside edge, and then you leverage over. This particular case, yeah, you're just playing the man there. Very awkward the way he fell in, but ended up being a clean hit. And, yeah, to be quite honest with you, good news, because as you said, when you watch something like that, a couple of things. First of all, for a player, you wonder on injury, but you're scared as well, right? Like, I don't care if you're young or you're old. You're just not used to being hit like that, right? Where you're all of a sudden like, what the hell just happened? So hopefully just ends up being a stinger, nothing serious. And yeah, it sure as he went in, you're like, wow, that that could be nasty. Well, so that was pretty good news.
Yeah, I don't want to be a guy who thinks always things are bad, but I immediately just thought of Colin White right away. Colin White had a more innocuous fall than that. He ends up dislocating his shoulder, has to have surgery, and he'll be out 5 months.
Yeah.
That was my immediate thought of, oh, my goodness. And dislocated shoulders? So I talked to, when we heard the news about Jack Hughes yesterday, and he's 20 years old. Man, like, they have found the way through technology now that when you suffer a knee injury back in the day, we're talking about Bobby Orr, right? Bobby Orr's career was cut so short because of all the knee injuries he suffered, but because the surgeries in the day just weren't up to the technology they have now.
JR, they used to, when they did Bobby's surgery and everybody else, I think they casted him for a month.
Yeah, it was
like,
just,
hey, let me see what your leg looks like in a month. Now you're up, you're mobilized the day after the surgery.
Yeah, it's like an ACL is still a significant injury, and it's a long-term rehab. But once you come back, in a lot of cases, you're just as good as you were before. But shoulder injuries are completely different. When I hear about, especially in contact sports like hockey and in football, when you start suffering, and separations are different than dislocations. Separations, I think, you can recover from.
Yeah.
You start dislocating your shoulder, it's never the same again.
Yeah.
You can have surgeries, but it's never the same.
Yeah.
It starts to pop out more. It's something that just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And so... and again, we won't have the full prognosis on Pinto. It doesn't sound like it's that, so that's the good news on that. But I absolutely hate seeing guys, especially young guys, end up with shoulder injuries early in their career.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you on Hughes, JR, as much as he's come along a little bit, when that hit happened, to me that looked like a boy against men. He got completely manhandled. In the case of this dislocation, you go back to Derek Brassard, the start of his career, the Brule kid that was in Columbus. I think RNH had it early in his career as well. We had Ponikarovsky in Toronto. He had dislocated his shoulder, JR, but he didn't want to have surgery, so he played his entire career rehabbing it and played with a brace and actually had a pretty good career for himself. But you're always trying to tighten the muscles, you're always working on it, and it always is popping out. And like you said, it becomes a real big problem. And also just your comfort level, your strength, your recovery. And as you said, it's completely different because I'm not assuming the surgery on that. I mean, they're basically going in, cutting everything around it, retightening the shoulder and then coming back out. And as you said, generally, I'm assuming
it's never the same.
It isn't, and that is, as I said, that's a big, big difference between. And then the other part, and you go back to Derek Stepan last year, talking to his father after what he had had. they tried a few times to try to pop his shoulder back in. Do you imagine? Well, thank God.
That doesn't
God.
Sound comfortable.
Oh, no, I was going to say,
pop this back
no,
in.
That's where you take out the knife and you put it between your teeth, or maybe you take a shot of that whiskey you're bringing. Like, mm-hmm. like it's an incredibly, and that's where you see with White or anybody else when you're going off. That's why you got that dropped arm, is that thing is most times popped out and not popped back in. And somebody's job is to hopefully pop that back in pretty quickly, and then you start worrying even more.
So we'll see how Shane Pinto is today. The Sens do have a practice scheduled for later this morning. We'll see if he's able to practice, if he's going to be able to play tomorrow. But it sounds like, again, it's more shorter term than longer term. And who knows? Maybe, you know, he's 20, whatever, he's 20 years old. Maybe he's wakes up this morning and, yeah, I'm a little bit sore, a little, ice, a little hot bath, whatever it takes, back in the lineup tomorrow. We'll
maybe
see
a
on
Kyle
that.
Turris.
Yeah, but overall, certainly more promising post-game talk from the coach than maybe we had suspected. All of which puts into focus, though, the fact that, and Chris Johnson spoke to this, coincidentally enough, before the game on TSN's NHL Insiders, talking about the fact that Pierre Dorion is searching for some goal scoring, be it at center or being on the wing. And it just goes to show you, I mean, the Senators are very thin. They're very thin in terms of players who can put the puck in the net. And we don't even know if Pinto can do that. He shows the promise of doing that. But when you subtract him from the lineup like he did last night, and again, who knows if he's going to miss. But it just that put the microscope on the fact that the Senators are one injury away from one of their better offensive players from having not much left at all from an offensive point of view.
Yeah, very much so. And again, Samford hasn't shown a lot, JR, but anybody elevate, and right now, what are you bringing in? Parker Kelly. Like, who slides up from your fourth line? Yeah, it dries up in a hurry. And also, kind of allotment of salary, Jerry, you really go back to the pre-agent signing of Dadonov at 3x5 or whatever it ended up being. That spot, and for what you hoped he would provide, which he didn't, but if he had been the player that you had in Florida, that's exactly kind of what you're looking for, right? I mean, you're looking for a guy to come in at what he was supposed to do and didn't do.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we'll keep our eye on that. But again, Chris Johnson reporting that the Senators are looking. So is there a trade perhaps in the offing? Does this move it to the forefront from the back burner? We'll wait and see on that. Do the Sens make a waiver claim, potentially even just for a, as you like to call them, a warm body that may be out there as well, given how thin the team is right now? Because, you know, I don't know, they're still at the stage where they're trying to properly develop their prospects. You don't want to force somebody who should be playing in Belleville to play in Ottawa if you don't have to. And if there's a situation where you can take somebody from another organization, Sens have 11 draft picks in this year's draft, including 3 second rounders. They've got a pile of prospects as well. Not everybody, as good as Ottawa's prospect pipeline is, not everybody is going to turn out. And not everybody, even if all of them did, will be able to play on the team, right? If you know, everybody's like, well, this guy will play in the NHL, this guy will play in the NHL. Like, there's only 12 spots at forward and six on defense. Not everybody is going to be able to play, and maybe they've already made an internal determination of, this guy is capable of playing in the NHL, but we don't see him as part of our organization when we get really good. So we get the chance to maybe move him along at this stage when his value is relatively high, and we can bring in somebody that can help us in the now. Yeah. Maybe that might be a situation we're looking at as well.
Yeah, you want a Nemestikov-style trade versus a second for a Stepan. I mean, absolutely, try to improve your group. And old Bear Boots or whatever, what's his name again, is on waivers overnight?
Barre Boulay or Boulay Barre.
Bear Boots.
Bear Boots. I like that, though. Let's go with that. The former. Well, here's the thing with Barre Boulay, and somebody tipped us off that apparently Ottawa was put in a waiver claim.
Like
I have no idea.
Like they would have any idea.
Yeah. You know, and let go by Tampa. Look, deep team. And they lost some players, but deep team.
Deep.
Goes to
deep
Seattle. Down. Gets claimed by Seattle. Can't make Seattle. So, really, what are we talking about here?
Deep depth in Seattle.
And Bear Boots. All right, 647. Your thoughts on what you saw from the Sens last night, positive or negative, is always welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. Again, Rangers in town for a 1 p.m. face-off tomorrow. And then the Caps are here to finish off the homestand on Monday night. Later on this morning, we'll have 100-level seats to give away to that Sens-Caps game. 648, when we come back, Jesperi Kotkaniemi puts the boots to Montreal, as does the Carolina Hurricanes Twitter account as well. Man, they just cannot help themselves. They're just 15 yards for piling on, but in a very funny way. All right, we'll talk about that, and we'll get into the baseball playoffs. Big night for a guy by the name of Chris Taylor. And the Brownies beat the Broncos in the Thursday nighter. All of that straight ahead here on a Friday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Welcome back. 6:51. Sens fall 2-1 to the Sharks last night. Got the Rangers in town for a game tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Sens are 2-2. I think people are reasonably satisfied with the start to the season. Not so much in Montreal, I'd say. I think fair to say. Habs 0-5. Historical context here. No team that has ever gone to the Stanley Cup final in NHL history has ever started off the next season at 0-5.
Oh.
Taking the knife there and twisting it just a little bit for the Habs fans. And to add, I can't say injury to insult or insult to injury because there was no injury involved. How about this guy coming back to Montreal and hitting the score sheet last night?
Aho walks behind the net. He's on his backhand. Plays it back. Shea. Fire score. Brady Shea with a heavy shot from the point. Yes, Barry Kotkaniemi with his first goal as a Hurricane comes against the Canadiens. Can you imagine that?
No, we can't. We don't have to imagine it because it actually happened. And it did not take the fans in the Bell Center long to realize who actually got that goal. You could hear the boos start to rise. Kotkaniemi gets the goal. Here was his reaction after the game.
Not really. I think that was a little funny, though. I think I laughed a little bit when I stepped on the ice. I feel like it gets you going a little bit when you hear that every time you go on the ice and touch the puck. So I enjoyed that.
Yes, they booed Kotkaniemi, did the Habs fans at the Bell Center for most of the night, chanting 6.1, as in what his salary is right now. And then something that was a little more colorful that starts with an F and ends in a U, KK. That's what he was serenaded with last night.
I think he's giggling when he looked at his direct deposit, $500K a month. And also, I really wonder from a Carolina standpoint, JR, as the dust settles, was it worth it to sign him? I'm just saying early on, it's great, and you're like, oh, man, we're going to show him. He has showed up, and his play so far, little bits I've seen, has been underwhelming. Realistically, are you looking at this and saying, man, did we get them? Or, boy, it's $6.1 million here. How is this going to end up playing out? Now, he's young. I do like him, JR, but that's just something I would ask him from Carolina. That was his first goal, and like I said, he has not done a lot for Carolina so far.
Yeah, it's $6.1 million. Because they realized that Montreal was backed into a corner. The player. The determination for me is on two things. First of all, his play, most importantly. But secondly, I'm assuming they make this play for Kotkaniemi. And it's structured the way it is because it makes Montreal hard to match. But there is a long-term, there's a vision of a long-term contract in place for him at, I would think, significantly less dollars than 6.1. So what is that number? Does Kotkaniemi sign an extension in January when he's eligible for it? Of 4 years at 5 years at $4 million a season or something like that, where you take the average over that, including the six this year, and you go, okay, Jesperi Kotkaniemi is signed for 5 years at $4.5 million a year. I can see that. Yeah. For the here and now, $6 million is a complete overpay for sure.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. A lot of time for Marcus Leto, who's the agent, doing that type of stuff and getting Kotkaniemi an offer sheet, then kind of circumventing or quite simply cheating to do something like that for a player. But what were the conversations? Anyways, we'll see. I'm just saying from a Carolina standpoint, it's not like he's gone in there and he's lighting it up. Now, on the other side, basically the equivalent for it, Dvorak is not, I can't even use that term, but he hasn't done, a draw.
Jack Squat?
Well, Jack Squat and Mr. Caulfield, Suzuki, everything else. So, that it hasn't been good for Montreal. Mark Bergevin's presser, we did not touch on JR. He still thinks he's got a real good hockey team.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah, don't think he does. I think he's got a slow defense, a goaltender that can't be a starter, and he's gone back to having a lot of small, skilled forwards that like to play on the outside. But anyways, we'll see where this ends up going. And from Montreal perspective, JR, I've been there, and I said this to Johnny yesterday, Mike Johnson. Man, as a manager, I don't care who you are. When you're sucking like that, and I remember when we traded Richard Zednik and he was on fire, quite simply, you knew this was going to happen. Like, it's terrible right now, and I don't care how he's playing. The fact that Kotkaniemi scored, it stings. Like, it stings if you're Mark Bergevin. It's not fun.
Montreal 0-5 to begin the year. Not good.
No.
All right, 6:56. Talk to Dave Poulin, by the way, who did the game in Montreal, coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. Quickly on the baseball playoffs last night, Game 5, NLCS, Dodgers backs against the wall at home, taking on the Braves. This one was, I don't say it was a no-doubter from the first pitch. Certainly was a no-doubter once it reached this point from Chris Taylor.
The 2-2. Swing and a high fly ball out towards left center field. On its way. He's done it again. Third homer of the night for Chris Taylor. He's knocked in six. And it's all Dodgers 7-2.
Yeah, and eventually they would win it 11-2. Yes, three home runs from Chris Taylor, who's kind of a, as you describe him, hammer, super utility guy, plays all over.
Exactly.
He plays the outfield. Now he's in for Justin Turner, who's out for the rest of the playoffs at third base. So he's able to play everywhere all over the field, for the which is especially important when you're in the National League as well, when you have the ability to play here, there, and everywhere. That's like a dream for the Blue Jays, guy that can play any position. Mm-hmm. But what a night with a stick for him. Three home runs on the game. Dodgers stay alive, so they're going back to Atlanta with the Braves still up 3-2. But the Braves got to be thinking a little bit, thinking the tiny bit in the back of their brain going, we had the Dodgers 3-1 last year and weren't able to finish the deal. Yeah. Although last year, again, it was neutral site. This year, they're going back to the somewhat friendly confines of whatever park they play in Atlanta.
And I agree with what you're saying, Jerry. You want to finish it off in game six, right? I think the momentum or the pressure really shifts if you lose that and all of a sudden there's a game seven. And guys, for a utility player, not that I've ever heard of the fella, he must be an elite company hammer of three home runs in a playoff game, right? I mean, can't imagine in his history of baseball been many fellas. And I heard JR's paper, he maybe has it in front of him, but that's incredible.
Reggie Jackson, of course, would be the most famous. That was in the clinching game of the World Series in 70. That's where he got the name Mr. October. Okay. I want to say that Albert Pujols did it for the Cardinals. I don't have a list in front of me, but it's not a long list of guys who have had three home runs in a baseball playoff game. Yeah. It's not a hugely long number. Yeah. You can see Hammer quickly trying to scan through that.
Enrique Hernandez did it for the Dodgers as well in 2017, of course. Altuve in 2017 with a three-homer game. The Panda, Pablo, 2012.
Pablo Sandoval?
Yeah, in the World Series.
Can you imagine how gassed he was having to run around the bases three times?
He had.
Well, how many belts he went through. Hitting all those dingers and swinging for the fence.
If they did like a chart of how much he was gassing around around the bases,
it would be ugly.
Pujols in the World Series in 2011. Adrian Bell. You know, it's happened more times than I guess than we would.
What
have you
got? What's your list? About a dozen?
Well, yeah, it's
or
looking
longer?
Like that. Adam Kennedy. We got George Brett.
Okay.
Reggie Jackson. Oh, Bob Robertson. Yes.
Bob Robertson.
Bob Robertson.
What year is that, Hammer?
1971.
Is that Pirates?
You got it.
Nice. Right.
And then you're getting into Babe Ruth a couple of times in 1928 and 1926. Wow, I had them all.
Talking about portly fellas right there. Babe Ruth, somewhat portly like
that's
Pablo
pretty,
Sandoval.
Still, as you go through the list, that's pretty elite company to join, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What a night for
Chris Taylor. Utility guy.
A.J. Pollock, by the way, had a pair of home runs for L.A. as well. So 11-2 is the final to beat the Braves. Game 6 will go tomorrow back in Atlanta. It's game 6 tonight of the ALCS. In Houston, with the Astros up 3-2 on the Red Sox, I see more stories surfacing now about more Astros cheating, apparently whistling from the dugout. People are, it's one whistle for a fastball, two whistles for a curveball. So people have isolated home runs that the Astros were hitting in the last two games at Fenway. And, you know, if you listen, now I don't know if people are dubbing whatever.
Exactly.
I know.
There was a problem.
They're just a target
I
turn, now.
I only watch a bit of the game, but I looked into the Astros dugout, and Roger Whittaker was on the back.
Your favorite. All right. Thoughts and any of that, always welcome. Text us at 12-1200.
I'm not playing any Roger Whittaker songs
it's
today.
It's 7
sorry.
O'clock. Here come the latest news and sports. We'll run down all the scoreboard and the scores for you when we come back. We'll talk more about the Sens game. What a night for... Well, not on the score sheet, but Timmy Stützle, man, he's just due. It's like a dam that's ready to break. And Thomas Chabot as well. That's from a positive point of view. More on the Shane Pinto injury as well. And the season debuts of Brady Tkachuk and Matt Murray. And Erik Karlsson also with a colorful interview on TSN last night as well. So we'll get into all of that when we come back. Sens Caps tickets coming up, $1,000 minutes. Dave Poulin from Montreal, all on the way here on this Friday morning. Here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.